podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use, doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit allaboutandroid.ting.com. That's allaboutandroid.ting.com. And by 99designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 126, recorded on Tuesday, September 10th, 2013. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps, the Android faithful. My name is Jason Howell.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
Yeah, Ron could not join us today. Gina, I'm super stoked that you're here, bringing the San Diego, the warm weather to the show.
Yeah. We miss Ron, but we have an awesome guest.
We do. And actually, I'm thinking Father Robert Ballesterre. I do not believe that I been on the show when you've been on, or have you been on when I've been out?
No, that's right. That we were together because at one point my first app, the company that made the app cheated and they loaded the
app. That's right.
Cheaters.
It's okay. You know, it made for some lively discussion.
Yes, it did.
Father Robert, it's awesome to have you on the show. Of course, you have a show on the network, This Week in Enterprise Tech.
That's right, where we talk all about iPads.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what we do. And video games.
And video games.
Yeah. We all know about enterprise technology. Course, you guys don't take your job seriously.
I know, right.
All you do is play games. So we've got, this has just been a crazy week. Lots of news. Even though everybody today has been talking about Apple, we've got lots of Android news. Notable hardware, just a ton of hardware coming out of IFA in Berlin, or IFA, if that's how you choose. We'll touch on just the important things, I think, the most notable pieces of hardware from IFA. Chrome apps coming to Android could happen sooner than you think. The end of some old desserts, throwing the old desserts out of the refrigerator.
We're going to sugary delights now, I believe.
Yeah, it's a little different going forward. But so a few desserts are just kind of getting the boot. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that here in a second. We've got so much more to talk about. Let's dive right into it and get into the news.
Google has released Android's Play Store numbers for the month of September, and Donut and Eclair are out. they're out. See you later. Jelly Bean actually sits at 45% of the distribution of Android apps that access the Play Store through the new Play Store app. Ice Cream Sandwich is at 21.7%, and Gingerbread is at 30.7%. So Gingerbread is really kind of the last eyesore here. And Gingerbread users lack support for things like GPU-based acceleration, the newest versions of OpenGL. These numbers come from Google, and they're a little bit of a cheat because the new Play Store app only works for Android 2.2 and above, right? So even if Eclair and Donut devices were trying to access, like they can't access this app, right? So they couldn't be in this chart. It feels like a little bit of a fudge to me. But when pressed, Google noted that Eclair and Donut accounted for about 1% of the devices that checked into Google servers in total. So really good looking numbers for Android. Google continuing to fight this whole fragmentation issue. They're making a big difference with the numbers. They're also making a lot of progress with Play services. But it looks like Eclair and Donut are now a thing of the past because they're not even getting the new Play app anymore.
That's sad because they're so delicious.
They're so delicious.
Now, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think 1% of devices checking in, I think that's pretty darn negligible as far as that's concerned.
Right.
So is that to say that the newest version of the Play Store app doesn't work on Donut and Eclair? Because Donut and Eclair still can get into Play Store via an app. It's just the newer version of it?
Right. It's just the latest version of the Play Store app is 2.2.2.2 and above only.
All right.
So, yeah. So they must be using an older version of the app, right? But but these numbers are only taken from the new version of the app. That feels like a little bit of a fudge to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Like when you
if it's 1%, it should be on the chart.
Yeah. When you put it that way, then you're like, okay, wait a minute. What other things aren't making it in? Maybe some devices are still locked in the old, although I don't know why they would be. And I guess the Play Store is actually updated by Google, not necessarily. You don't download the Play Store app from the Play Store so that it's updated through the Play Store and you know when it's happening. It happens behind the scenes.
It's also self-adjusting because you got to figure that the devices that are using the really, really old, outdated versions of Android are users who really don't care. I mean, they're not going to be complaining. They're not going to be worrying. They just want a phone that works the way that it's been working for the last 4 years. Mm. So when you look at how those numbers are actually laid out, it makes sense, especially with the way that they're rolling out the new versions of the Play Store, that we're slowly going to see the fragmentation not look like such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Actually, I'm going to move the third story up because I didn't realize when I was setting this up how well they kind of play into each other. So hold off on the story you were about to read, Father Robert.
Right.
And this was really, I just thought it was an interesting read. It's not necessarily like a news item, but we had... and did my notes totally just... No, there we go. Okay, so we had Ron Amadio on of Ars Technica a few weeks ago, and he was fantastic on the show. It was great to have him on the show. And I'm sure that we talked about this while he was here, but he wrote an article for Ars Technica about 6 days ago that basically was the topic of, you know, Google... you know, being attacked on the dreaded kind of fragmentation argument, the things that they're doing to kind of tackle this. It's definitely been a topic that we've talked about on the show a few times. But some interesting points. The Play Services app, obviously, which isn't really an app because it has these integrated permissions that apps actually don't have. It's like a super app in some ways. Serves those lower level APIs and background services. The Play Store plays a component, as we've seen in the recent past, because it has an active role in what Google is doing in separating those key features, once key features, of the Android OS into separate apps. And he actually broke everything down into a neat little chart, and charts are fun, so go ahead and show that. That really shows you just how much control Google has over the experience thanks to these two things. This is a lot of control that they haven't had up until... you know, pretty recently, they had lost a lot of control to the different OEMs that were kind of splintering off Android into their own ways and doing their own things. Ron argues that this is how you beat fragmentation. I completely agree with that. You take Koch, another pretty well-known developer that we've talked about plenty of times on the show, into the equation as well. He took to Google Plus with an interesting follow-up. He says, Google Play Services is a way to reassert control of Android by having the app ecosystem add a dependence on Google. So it's kind of what we're talking about. OEMs and carriers, and particularly Samsung, probably don't like this as it prevents them from forking Android a la Kindle and running with it. But I had a funny realization. If OEMs actually released timely updates to their Android phones, Google Play Services would never have been necessary. It's a very interesting read. It's definitely a long read, but worth checking out. The question that I kind of got from it is, okay, at the end of the day, all this stuff is being broken out and done individually. And then you take KitKat, right? KitKat is a point release. It's not a major update, a major revision. What do we have to look forward to in future versions of the OS specifically if all this cool stuff is happening outside of the OS? What do you guys think?
Well, I think this is just a sign of a maturing operating system and Google's recognition that the OEMs have not been acting in the best interest of Android. I think, when Android started out, it was sort of like, okay, this is going to be great. We're going to use your ideas. You're going to use our ideas. It's going to be big sharing. We're going to create something wonderful. And that's not how it played out. Everyone wanted to carve out their own niche. They wanted to carve out their own hardware proprietary area. And this is Google's way of sort of enticing them back into the fold, saying, look, if you want to do your own customizations, that's great. You're just not going to get all the latest and greatest from us. If you don't want to build your system and skin it in a way that will play properly with Google Play Services, you're going to be at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. This is a better way to do it than to just say, Samsung, you don't get to use Android anymore, or HTC, you're busted. This is really the only way. It's the carrot and stick approach. You give them something that they're going to lose, and you give them something that they're going to get.
Yeah, and they get a lot if they integrate Google services. That's kind of what Android is all about. What do you think about this, Gina?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, nothing is stopping another company from building this middle layer, like on top of the OSP, right? So if you think about the open source project or that bottom layer, like pure Android itself is a platform for this middle layer, which is Play Services, and then you have all the Google apps on top. Like manufacturers actually have a choice, right? Like they can go with all the services that Google's already built, right, for on top of Android and comply with what Android wants from them, or they can go all in and build their own kind of middle layer or play services type layer. We haven't really seen anybody do that, right? I mean, the only customizations we've seen are like skins and that kind of thing, kind of surface things. But this Play Services layer is this interesting middle layer that really is, I mean, it really is compelling in that, you know, Google is the company that's the most invested into Android. They have they're first, right? They know what's going on with the operating system before anybody else does. They're completely invested. So yeah, I mean, they can make a really compelling experience for manufacturers to go along with that middle layer, that proprietary middle layer. I'm going to say proprietary because these are basically closed source apps on top of an open source operating system. Or, I mean, a company could try to, could not fork Android, but use the base Android as a base for their own sort of middle layer. But we haven't really seen anybody buy into Android to that level yet.
Gina, let me ask you that question. What business model, what company would actually say, you know what, we don't want Google Play Services. It's a disadvantage for us because of whatever, and therefore we're going to create something. What are the environmental variables that need to take place in order for a company to say, we're taking Android, scraping off all your stuff and going off on our own?
Well, I mean, Amazon, right? I mean, Amazon that makes that business sense for Amazon to do that. Amazon, I don't know, forked Android or is using Android on the Kindle without any of the Google services on top. I mean, I think, you know, even like a company like Samsung, which seems to have aspirations to be a software company, does it make sense for Samsung to start from scratch building a mobile operating system? Or does it make sense for them to take the, you know, Android operating system, just a pure Android open source operating system, and then build on top of that? I mean, I don't know. That's a question for Samsung. But it's one of those things like, why reinvent the wheel when you don't have to? If you want to truly ship a device that is Google free, you can do that with the open source Android. But Google has a huge advantage. They've got a huge ecosystem that's already established. They've been there first. You know, Play Services is built, optimized for Google services. And, you know, in a lot of ways, Google is still really in control of Android, even the open source aspect of it.
Yeah, and more so, you know, and that's probably why some people, you know, complain about the lack of the open source nature of Android as it matures, as Google kind of grabs a hold of it. I think that's kind of essential, though, at this point.
Yeah.
We've kind of seen what happens when it's wide open. And we also see the benefits of what happens when it kind of locks down a little bit, right? Like, I love the Google services. And more they get integrated and work so seamlessly together, the more I can't imagine Android without it. Not that I could imagine Android not being kind of the Google vision before, because that's just the way I've always been in Android, but I couldn't imagine operating in an Android world that doesn't have access to those services. Probably why I don't have a Kindle. I mean, you know,
the death of open source.
Oh, yeah.
No,
it's okay.
It's wah, wah.
I know, it's a big wah wah.
No, does it feel like that to you, the death of the open source project?
Because
they're decoupling this proprietary stuff into that middle layer that's not open source?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm speaking with hyperbole, but there is a sense. I get this from my hardcore programming buddies, you know, the hippie programmers who are basically saying, well, the forking is necessary for open source to express itself. The forking is necessary for programmers to be able to create new ideas, some of which may be dead ends and some of which may be great. We don't want to see that. The consumer level doesn't want to see that. We want to see the thing that works well across all platforms. And so as your platform matures, it does feel a little bit like the death of open source. It's not, but it feels like it to the people who are hardcore into the ideals of a free and open software.
Right. Let a thousand flowers bloom. Everybody's got their own fork or their own flavor, and there's lots of choice and a lot of modifications. Yeah.
Well, let's move on. So let me ask you a question. Do you like Chrome? Duh. Do you like Chrome apps? Well, of course you do. Well, what if you could get your Chrome apps outside of your Chrome browser? That's right. That's what Google's trying to do right now. They're launching a new breed of Chrome apps for the browser's fifth anniversary. And here's the idea. They're going to work Like a series of applications that can work in Windows and OS X outside of the browsers. These apps run like native apps on Windows and Mac OS, but they utilize web technologies and Chrome-specific code, so they're really Chrome apps. If you can develop Chrome apps, you can now develop applications for native desktops. Taking it one step further, the Chrome developers announced plans to bring Chrome apps to Android someday. That's right. Let's get incestuous here. Chrome apps on top of Android. They'd be delivered via the Play Store, and they cautioned that this wouldn't be happening soon because, of course, there are a lot of hurdles to overcome, but it's on the map. This I'm actually excited by. Remember a couple of years back when all the talk was about the new Chrome or whatever, Google OS. This brings them one step further. Of course, it's going to be platform agnostic. But if I can now access my favorite Chrome apps without actually having to fire up a browser, it brings me one step further to having the experience the way I want it. Jason, what do you think?
I'm just fascinated by... I feel like we've been dancing around the merging of Chrome OS and Android for so long. And this is kind of indication that there really is something to that. You know what I mean? Like we hear these comments here and there. Now they're basically saying, yes, they're apps that don't require a browser and they could run like an app on your desktop or, you know, by the way, on your Android device. And we're bringing it to Android. I just don't understand. Like it kind of makes my brain explode a little bit. I'm trying to figure it out exactly and figure out like why I would choose to run a Twitter Chrome app on my Android device as opposed to
just running
it. Like what would the benefit be? I understand the benefit on Chrome OS. I love Chrome OS. My opinion on it has completely changed since this last I/O and my experience with the Pixel. I love this thing. And so I'm not necessarily against the idea. I'm just trying to figure out like why.
I'm thinking it's a developer.
Makes my brain hurt.
Right, Gina? I mean, if I can write a single set of code and have it work across browsers, across desktops, as a developer, that's an option I want. I don't want to have to write the browser app and then the iOS app and then the Android app and then the Windows app and the OS X app. If I can write it once and sell it many times, that's attractive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially that if you can write it in web technologies, right, which are so easy and universal. So these apps are going to be distributed through the Play Store on all different OSs, right? So Windows, Mac, Linux. These apps are platform agnostic. Then,
yeah. Well,
that's what they're saying.
We're so far out from it. I mean, they acknowledge that this is not going to happen anytime soon. We're so far out from it that this is kind of still the dream stage. We kind of know the technology that needs to go to make this work. The only question is how they're going to market it.
Right. I mean, this is kind of mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. Because you're like, oh, this is okay. So now Chrome and Android, if this actually comes to fruition, Chrome and Android truly are competing against one another head-to-head, right? They're both selling out. You know, you're distributing apps through the Play Store for both these platforms. One is for all different platforms, and you have that right one run anywhere advantage for developers, and the other is for Android apps only. I also would love to see this play out on iOS. I mean, can you imagine going to the Google Play Store on iOS and installing a Chrome app on your iDevice? Like,
I know. Wow. Yeah.
So crazy. That seems insane.
And then my head exploded.
And then your head exploded. But you know, I feel like so many companies have tried this so many times. I mean, how many times has been this promise of like packaged web apps that you can, you know, write, you know, there were widgets on Windows that were, you know, HTML based and then there were web technology based native apps. And then Facebook said, no, the native code is better. I mean, I think that building native mobile apps in particular, two different ones for different the two major operating systems that I care about anyway, is a huge pain. It's a cost and it's difficult, and so the right ones run anywhere promise is very appealing, but no one has been able to pull it off. And this does seem more like a pipe dream than anything else. But I'd like to see Chrome and Android compete more head to head and see who comes out in the end.
The highway through the history of programming is littered with the corpses of common platform initiatives. I mean, we hear this, everyone. This was supposed to be the big thing about Windows 8 Metro or whatever. I'm still going to call it Metro, right? Which is write it once. It'll work on the Xbox. It'll work on your phone. It'll work on your tablet. It'll work on your desktop. And what people realize is, yeah, you could kind of do that. It will kind of work.
But is that ideal?
It's not ideal. If you tune it, it'll work better.
Right.
And then you've just lost your common platform.
Strange
apps of Java. I mean, yeah, this was Java. The promise of Java. Exactly. Now yeah. Java is basically a language where you write Android apps in. I mean, you know. But this is, I mean, this is particularly interesting because the web technology is right. And Windows tried this with Metro. So I don't know. Part of me is like, if anybody can pull this off, Google can. But at the same time, you know, Google's been distributing web apps through the Chrome Web Store for a while now. And that hasn't exactly been like a huge success.
You know what? The more I think about this, it reminds me of the Air apps.
Yep.
Right,
yeah,
the Adobe
yes,
Air
yes,
app that was which the you got Air through apps, the, yes. the Play Store, and it's kind of the same thing, right?
Which was cool at first, and then people started saying, damn it, Air, why are you resource hogging? Why are you crashing?
It was interesting at first, but then when you really started to play around with some of those apps, yeah, it was a resource hog, and it just was not ideal. It was not the ideal way to do that. The ideal way was an app that was developed specifically for Android, not running through an Air container or whatever you want to call it.
Right, it's kind of the same thing. The Java runtime was a hog. The Adobe runtime was a hog. Now, I mean, if Chrome has anything, it's really fast code, right? That runs really fast on any device. So Google has a you know, there's a possibility there that Chrome could be running in the background and not, you know, killing your CPU and able to have these apps run in the foreground. But no one else really has been able to pull that off.
And it's and in this, it becomes even. Even less difficult to envision a Chrome OS phone at some point, right? Like, yeah, it's just, it makes my brain explode a little bit. How about some glass? We've got definitely a small list of interesting glass news this last
week. Yeah, Google Glass, an update came down just today. And in fact, I got it just before the show.
Excellent.
XE9 is live. A big change log here. You've got vignettes, which is a way to take a picture of whatever you're looking at and having the glass screen superimposed on the image so someone can see what you're seeing when you take a picture with glass. What else? You got sound search. You can long press the touchpad for Google search and swipe forward to start a sound search, and Google will listen for a moment. And in fact, it's so funny. It heard me talking and it knew it was doing a sound search and just said no sound recognized. Because
I thought it would recognize that you were doing like, all that Android.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, oh, all about Android. That's the show on Twitch.
Well, here, do a sound search really quick, Gina. What does the fox say? Okay, no, I'm sorry. That's a rat hole. Never mind. Back to glass.
New Google Now cards, transit reminders, nearby attractions, nearby photo spots, and news. You can now set up a Google Apps account on your Glass. It's going to make Jeff Jarvis really happy tomorrow. Those with Google Apps can turn on their Glass service through their admin console and apps and set up their Glass on their Google Apps account. Most Google Apps are supported, and Google says they'll continue testing and adding services as they go. So you have to factory reset your Glass through device info card and settings to set up an apps account. I have yet to do that. I was kind of hoping you could have both accounts. I have both a vanilla Gmail account and an apps account plugged in. And finally, we got remote control. So, you know, Jason, there's the screencasting app and the My Glass app on your device. You can actually remote control Glass on that. So if you swipe back and forth, you can swipe through cards and remote control your Glass.
Oh, that's neat.
Which is really neat. So it's interesting, you know, several of these, that functionality, the remote control along with the screencast and then the vignette, it seems like Google's really building in features that sort of help Glass market itself, right? Because these are ways that you can say, hey, this was obviously taken with Glass if you see the vignette, or it's an easy way to show somebody, hey, this is how you navigate Glass on their own phone, which is pretty cool. Google's going to make this is going to be a consumer product. Google confirmed that the Glassware app store is coming next year, which is when Glass is going to be available to the general public. We don't know when next year, but they didn't share any other additional details. We don't know if the Glass app store is going to be part of Google Play or separate, or if developers will be able to charge for apps by the time the store opens. Right now, the Glass API terms of service requires the developers offer apps for free. So you can't charge for apps right now on Glass. So that's really interesting. Google's committed to Glass. They're going forward with it. And issuing a lot of really great updates, I have to say.
I would be floored if there was a separate Glass app store than, you know,
I
outside
would too.
Of the Play
well,
I
mean,
store.
That's
I
where,
mean, especially considering what we just talked about.
That's where I could see Chrome apps running on top of Android would be useful. You know, not having it in your browser in Glass, but just have it natively pop up. That'd be kind of cool.
Right. Cool stuff. I What do I use glass for these days? I pull it out every once in a while and take videos of my kids. That's pretty much what I use glass for.
Yours is baby glass.
Yes, totally.
Baby glass. It's true.
Yeah. I should really use it more than I do. But hey, when I do use it, though, it comes in really handy and I get some pretty awesome footage. So it's definitely worth it for that. Let's take a break and thank our first sponsor of today's episode, Ting. Ting is a no BS mobile service. We've talked about them on the show plenty of times before. It's an MVNO reseller of the nationwide Sprint network, and they are awesome. They're very different from what you're probably used to with your own network or service provider. They do not have contracts, no early termination fees, no bundling or ride-along services. You choose through these service levels for voice, minutes, text messages, and megabytes, and all are billed separately. There's no overage charges or penalties, so if you use more than you thought you would, you're really just paying for what you used, and that's pretty darn awesome. No add-on charges, things like voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding. All these features, including more, are no add-on charges. You're not paying more for those features. They are just included. You won't find any mysterious line items on your bill. Ting actually breaks it out and makes it really easy for you to kind of read through your bill online and pick it apart. And they put it into, into context for you. There's no hidden charges in there, no recovery fees. It's just really easy to read and understand exactly what you're paying for and why. And you can have unlimited devices on one plan. Have as many devices as you want. You're sharing pooled minutes, messages, and megabytes, and each device on that plan costs a flat $6 per month. They, as I said, have a great control panel. It's just really handy. They also have excellent no-hold customer support. You can also go to help.ting.com and see that they have just a very active customer forum there to put you in contact with other customers of Ting, as well as, they provide their own powerful support through a help ticketing system. They have video tutorials, video startup guides, and so much more. So here's what you do. If Ting sounds interesting, first you purchase your mobile device, and when you go to the site and you pick out your device, you're buying this unlocked and unsubsidized, essentially. So it's going to cost you a little bit more, but you own the device outright. This is just kind of what you pay when you get used to the fact that you're buying a device unsubsidized. In the U.S., we are addicted to these subsidies. This is a way to break yourself of that. You will receive this device in 2 to 5 business days, and then you activate your device with Ting, and you have the option to select a new phone number, or if you have one that's super awesome, you can port that one as well. Ting will break your rates out into the minutes, text messages, and megabytes and bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. So you get the bill at the end of the month based on your usage, and that's a really big differentiator for Ting. Very cool. So you can visit Ting today. Be sure to go to allaboutandroid.ting.com. That's allaboutandroid.ting.com. You can save money, better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. You can check out their savings calculator. They make it really easy with the savings calculator to see how much you or your company can save. And you kind of plug in there what your usage is right now and who you're with, and they'll break it out and show you just how much money you're going to save with Ting. All About Android viewers actually save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. So you get that if you visit allaboutandroid.ting.com. That also tells them that you heard about Ting through All About Android, which is good for us. Yay. So visit allaboutandroid.ting.com and start saving today. Ting is awesome. Go check them out. And we thank Ting for their support of All About Android. All right, let's move into a very bulky hardware section this week. Oof. And even the first one, it's like, I'm not going to touch on all of this because it's incredible, but Samsung obviously was kind of the big announcement at IFA in Berlin last week. And actually, Gina, you were mentioning before the show, it's kind of deja vu because we did the Samsung announcement and covered it on Twit Live as it was happening. So I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but I'll just kind of touch on what they announced. First off, we knew that the Galaxy Gear was coming, and it was in fact announced. $299.99, so $300 arriving October 1st or right around there. Obviously, it's a watch that integrates with the Galaxy line. At launch, it's actually compatible with the Note 3 and the 10.1, the other two devices that they announced at IFA, which I'll talk about in a second. More Galaxy devices will be compatible with it soon. I believe once they get upgraded to 4.3, that will happen. So limited to only Samsung devices, though. That's probably a big kind of, I don't know. I kind of see it as
a few Samsung devices.
Yes, yeah, and especially at launch, definitely just a few. But, you know, it's got a 1.9 megapixel camera, which is on the wrist. It's kind of an interesting method of taking a picture because you kind of hold it up, not quite like you're shooting a laser from your watch, but sideways like you're, I don't know, Dick Tracy or something. I don't know. I feel like I'm attacking someone when I do that.
It's kind of ninja.
It feels a little, okay.
But it actually kind of forces you to bring the screen closer to your face so you can see what you're shooting a little better. So I guess that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I can see
that. You know?
Yeah, but so then you're always shooting below your eye because you can't actually bring it up to your face.
Right.
You're going to have that weird,
from the belt
chest
clip.
Chest level shots. Mm.
720p video recording and playback. They have just a slew of Samsung apps and chat on messaging service. Also a bunch of featured apps, companies like Evernote, Path, Pocket, all, you know, and plenty more like exercise related apps being developed for this. Two microphones, one speaker, Bluetooth 4.0 and low energy LE. 4 gigs of onboard storage, which isn't a lot, but I mean, it's a watch. How much do you really want on your watch? 512 megs of RAM, 315 milliamp hour battery, which again sounds low, but it's a watch form factor. Like, mm-hmm. How much of a battery are you going to fit in here without it being too big and chunky? Samsung says
25 hour?
What's that?
I'm sorry, Jason, 25 hour battery life? That's what they were claiming?
Yeah, I believe that's what they were claiming. 25 hour battery life. I know that some of the stuff that I was reading on The Verge said that by the end of the whole press hoo-ha that was happening there, they were definitely low on battery. But they were probably being used nonstop that entire time.
Much.
Yeah. So, you know, your actual usage on a day-to-day basis probably would vary from that.
Right.
Let me qualify by saying it's a first-generation device, and sure. I like it. I like the ability, the fact that they're reaching out into another screen. I'm going to get one of these. I'm a geek enough to want one of these in my hands in the very near future. But by the same token, I'm not really sure who they're marketing this to. I mean, you could say, it's people who want to take pictures because that's great. The ability to be able to snap a picture really quickly rather than taking your phone out of your pocket. But then it's a low resolution sensor. It's less than 2 megapixel.
Mm-hmm.
You could say it's for the first adopters. It's for the people who want to hack around. But then it's only been limited to connectivity to certain Samsung phones.
Yeah.
You could say, it's people who they just want the latest and greatest, a new kind of thing that looks good and tells people that they can afford technology like this. But then it's a little bit too big and bulky to really be a fashion accessory. And you could say it's for the enthusiast, but then the price point is off. So it almost feels as if it's at that really dangerous spot where it does everything, just nothing well. But of course, I could be wrong. I mean, we could get it and it could be amazing and it could have better than advertised a battery life. It could look really good. It could be the new fashion accessory, and I'll have to go back to the Enterprise show.
Yeah, my gut tells me it's not going to be those things. I mean, it's interesting, and it certainly has an audience.
Yeah,
but it's not, when you isolate it to just the Samsung devices. And I understand the Galaxy devices, no less. I understand Samsung's desire to do this. They really are, you know, one of the companies right now in the Android world that has like an ecosystem outside of Google, and they want to kind of get people working within that. And not to mention the Galaxy S series is incredibly popular.
Right.
So they certainly have the volume of devices. But like you said, $300 is pretty expensive for this add-on device that's always tethered to your phone. Some people are indeed going to want that, but I don't think it's going to be like a these are not going to sell out in record numbers, and people, you know, there will not be a story a few days after it goes on sale about, wow, this is amazing, this is the second coming.
It's going to work originally with the Galaxy Note 3, and then they said with additional support coming soon, and we have no idea what that means. Coming soon could be, well, in 6 months we might start to trail it out for the S4 and maybe for the S3, but that's it.
Yeah, I think they said they want to get it working on the S4 by the end of the year, potentially when the S4 upgrades to 4.3. So it sounds like 4.3 might be the requirement, or, you know, and maybe that'll peel back after it's been out for a little while. I don't remember them doing so well.
Talking about any hooks. They weren't releasing an API for this, right?
No, not that I saw.
Okay, well,
no. I mean, like the Note has a very strong following. I mean, people love the Note, and if you already have the Samsung device and you're a hyper connected person who's really into fitness, I mean, I agree that Samsung could have done a better job of communicating who this is for. And I agree that right now it's for just really hardcore Samsung stuff, you know, users and fans. And Samsung has these people, has these users, but right now it's like, you know, I think that there are a lot of different markets you could market smartwatches to. I think fitness nuts is definitely, you know, a market for that. Parents, I mean, people who have to do things sort of hand-free or with one hand, I think that there's something there, you know, for being able to take a quick picture or you know, get a text message without having to take your phone out. Kind of all the same reasons why you'd want glass. But yeah, the Gear just didn't grab me. I mean, it certainly didn't look as bad as I thought it would. I would wear it. I mean, if I had a Samsung phone, I'd consider it. The price point is a little steep. But the other thing I really want is wireless charging. The fact that I have to charge this thing every night, I need to be able to just set it down on my nightstand or my dresser, you know, not have to think about it. But just the drag of sort of, I know I sound really lazy right now, but like the drag of charging my watch every night is it feels just not quite there yet. It feels like technology's just not there yet.
Yeah. Agreed. Now you mentioned the Note. The Galaxy Note 3 was another one. And I think this was definitely a little bit more on the impressive side. And again, like you mentioned, the Note has a lot of fans. So I think this is probably going to do pretty well. 4.3, latest version of TouchWiz. Obviously, all the Samsung devices kind of have that these days for the most part. 5.7-inch Super AMOLED display, 1920 by 1080 resolution. 3 gigs of RAM. So it's packing a punch there. 2.3 gigahertz Snapdragon 800 CPU in the LTE variant, or 1.9 gigahertz Exynos. Octa-core in the 3G variant, 13 megapixel rear camera. What else do we have here? I know I'm missing stuff. S Pen has a bunch of new features, things like Air Command, which actually looks a lot like Pi Control. If you've seen kind of the Pi Control stuff on Android these days, that seems to be kind of the rage on some ROMs and stuff, to where you click a button on the side of the stylus while holding it above the screen, and then this little semicircle appears of options over the top of whatever you happen to be looking at, and then you can kind of select from the menu. You can run certain apps in a small kind of movable window throughout the interface. It also happens to be the first phone with USB 3.0 support, and that's interesting because of the file transfer capabilities. It's definitely very fast there, but it also charges much faster, nearly twice as fast as you know, phones that we're used to charging the batteries on there. And it's the first non-Nexus device with 4.3. I know I've missed stuff on this, particularly the price, which I don't think that did they announce a price at the event.
Oh, it's going to be cheap. It's going to be very, very cheap.
Oh yeah, it's going to be like
$100 maybe.
Basement, yes, bargain basement prices.
I don't believe that they did, Jason.
Oh, the leather back,
Chad.
Yeah, this leather, stitched leather backing. There you go. And then cases that also still have that smart view window that's now extended. And because it's using OLED, it should keep the other pixels off. So you're using actually less screen for for better battery life.
That's cool.
But
I like that. That's actually pretty cool.
Stitched leather, though. In pink, white, and...
Stitched pleather.
I know. Pleather. Yes. No, plastic that has been made. It's not even pleather. It's plastic to be made to look like leather.
Samsung is addicted to their plastics.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, regardless, though, the hardware is pretty impressive. I think it's a great follow-up to the Note 2.
Note 2 is one of my favorite phones. I'm sure the Note 3 is just going to improve on that.
Yeah. So there you go. And then finally, the Galaxy Note 10.1. You know, a lot of the similar kind of S Pen functionality there. 8220 milliamp hour battery. So, of course, it requires a big battery. It's a 10.1-inch tablet. WQXGA screen. So this is the same as the Nexus 10, 2560 by 1600. It's a super clear LCD display, they say. 8 megapixel rear-facing camera. 3 gigs of RAM again. Let's see here. What else? 2.3 gigahertz Snapdragon 800 for LTE. And then 1.9 gigahertz Exynos Octa-core for 3G.
So that's to say that they finally sized up the screen.
Yes. I mean, that was my main takeaway. It was, right. You know, on the note that I, the the Note 10.1 that I reviewed, the display was just
Let me get this straight. So a 10-inch screen has a lower resolution than the 5-inch screen.
Right.
I never understood that.
Both of these can do split screen apps.
Mm-hmm.
And
if they're supported.
If it's a supported. It's kind of like the Samsung Baked app.
Yeah.
And it looks like the 10.1 also has the 3.0 USB.
I'm not surprised. It's probably a standard that they're going to continue on with the Galaxies going forward. So there you go. All three arriving around the beginning of October. No real specific dates from what I could find. And there you have it. That's Samsung.
Boom.
Boom.
A lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
We also have an announcement from Sony. Sony announced the Xperia Z1, which is aiming to be the biggest and best Android camera phone yet. Mm-hmm. It's got a 5-inch 1080p display. It's waterproof. 20.7 megapixel camera with large CMOS sensor for better low-light performance. Social One streams live video to Facebook. It's got a Snapdragon 800 processor, 2.2 gigahertz quad-core Adreno 330 GPU, 2 gigabytes of RAM, 16 gigabyte storage, micro SD, 3,000 milliamp battery, running Android 4.2.2, comes in black, white, and purple, and it will be on sale worldwide later this month. No pricing just yet.
Any idea what carrier?
I don't know if they listed
I don't think
the carriers
they listed
yet.
I think they did. Nope.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they did.
No carrier agreements in place for the U.S. just yet, reports The Verge.
The camera. I mean,
there we go. Okay.
I really want to see a picture from this camera in low light, and then I will judge. But
on a handset.
Yeah, I like how all the stories about this camera don't actually show pictures from the camera. Why is that happening?
What's that about?
It almost feels like, okay, it's not baked, but look, it's pretty. The lines are pretty.
Right. That's what I always wonder when something like that is released and there are no samples that are...
Right.
That
and if you're going to advertise it as the best and biggest sensor in any Android phone ever, you're probably going to want to show people samples of those high-quality photos.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. Do you remember last year when LG left the tablet business in June of 2012? They basically said, look, we want to focus on our phones. Well, they're back. I guess they're done focusing on their phones because they released the LG G-Pad 8.3. It has some pretty decent build quality. Listen to these specs. It's got an aluminum backing for those people who like that nice brushed aluminum feel. It has a Snapdragon 600 processor, so it's got plenty of speed. It has an 8.3-inch 1920 by 1200 display. Now, LG wanted a tablet that fit into the average Korean hand size. Now, no joke. Yeah. I'm actually serious about that. They said, look, we've designed this so that a Korean hand can actually comfortably hold this thing. And that's why it's 8.3 inches. That's not just the size of the screen, and therefore they had to build around it. It's also 8.3 millimeters thick. So it looks, on paper, like it's an impressive device. Some of the first looks out of IFA have said that it's actually a good size. You know, it's not too big, like a 10-inch tablet. It feels more substantial than a 7-inch tablet. It looks speedy. The screen is actually pretty beautiful. It's pretty bright, even in a brightly lit room. Now, the Verge story that I read was interesting because they extolled the virtues of the tablet. And the one thing that they could say was, but the app ecosystem isn't there yet. And how many times have we heard? I'm so sick of that.
I read that and I put my head in my palm. I was just like, oh.
Every time I see that, I want to sit down with the author and say, okay, show me the apps that you're using that I can't get on my Android device.
Kind of just feels like a lazy comment.
It is a lazy comment.
Yeah. I hate to say that, but when I read that now, it's like, well, no, there are actually great apps on the tablet ecosystem. And if you're just saying that, then that's personal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I get it. If they really like iOS, the ecosystem, that's great. But I'm never wanting in apps for my Android devices. And looking at this, if they could have a decent price point, I actually couldn't find a price point. If they could release this at, say, the price point of a Nexus 7, like that $229 to $300 price point, this is actually a pretty compelling device.
Yeah, it's nice looking.
Welcome back to the tablet market, LG.
Yeah, we'll see how the tablet market treats them.
I haven't really gotten a chance to hold an eight inch device. It looks like from that video that you're straining a little bit, but you can hold it single-handedly. I'll be honest, the 10 inch tablets just don't, they're kind of yawners to me because I'm never going to go back to that size personally. I want to be able to hold my tablet in one hand. And so, yeah, looking at this video, it does look like this is a single-handed device. Well, which is good. A little awkward.
What I want is I want someone to finally put a cellular radio in one of these so I could use that as my phone. That's all I want. I would actually
believe me, it's coming.
The Sony Xperia ZU. Yeah, have you seen that thing?
Yeah, I know. It's huge.
And when they... Okay, so just real quick because I'm watching it right now. When they say one-handed, they don't mean hold and operate with one hand.
Oh, yeah,
side to side, right? Like, there's no way your one hand could hold that and reach to the other side of the corner. Yeah.
If you want to touch the other corner, you kind of have to throw the tablet up and then move your finger real quickly and then put your hand back down.
It's like,
to catch it.
Right. A kung fu move where you jump up.
Little matrix thing.
Yeah, a little matrix
and spin.
And, okay. All right. Well, that should be possible. They're doing a lot of crazy stuff in Android, so I'm not surprised. So just real quick, some of the others, we don't need to go into these, but just to mention, Asus had a number of different updates to foam pads, Transformer Pad, Transformer Book, new memo pads. Alcatel had the Alcatel One Touch Idol X and One Touch Hero Android smartphones, which look interesting. Xiaomi.
Yeah, that sounds great.
No, I normally say this right, and I completely had a brain fart.
Xiaomi.
They debuted the Mi3, which is kind of the first phone of theirs since Hugo Barra.
Is that Ghost Protocol? Was that with Tom Cruise? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. You might be right. That might be Mission Impossible. And that looks interesting, but of course, right now it's just available in China. So it's but who knows? Their ambition is to extend further, so maybe we'll see this someday.
So if we have any fans in China who want to send us a sample.
Or take me to task for my horrible pronunciation.
There we go.
Please email aaa@twit.tv. And finally, Qualcomm announced the Talk smartwatch. This is maybe the one thing that'll dive in just a tiny bit more. 3 days on a single charge, low power Mirasol display that requires no backlight, so that surely helps on the charging. Wireless charging, around $300 next month. Obviously not isolated to just Samsung Galaxy devices. So there you go. I would like to see one of those.
So it does exist. And it's thinner, it's lighter. And it may actually do everything I want it to do. It doesn't have a bulky camera. It
doesn't have Samsung apps on it.
It doesn't have Samsung apps, but, okay.
So there we go. That's IFA. Interesting stuff. Right there towards the end, my eyes kind of glazed over a little bit. I was like, okay, that's a lot of hardware.
You can only take so much hardware before you start saying, it all looks alike.
Exactly. So what should we do to counteract that? Talk about more hardware. So... A device appears in the Google video, the Kit Kat statue unveiling, as we showed off on last week's show, and the internet goes nuts with speculation. Welcome to Android. About 1 month ago, the LG D820 passed through the FCC, and when that information came back just last week, folks at s4gru.com noted that the backplate of the device that passed through the FCC matched up with the mystery phone from that video rather well. And Chad, there's an animated... GIF. I have to think every time I say that. There we go. Showing what passed through the FCC and the device that the gentleman was holding in the leaked video. So everybody was like, oh my gosh, it's the same device. Some, like often trusted leaker EV Leaks, are saying that this is actually not the next Nexus, citing some information that they have. Others, like Artem, founder of Android Police, make the case that this is, in fact, likely the next Nexus device, thanks to a list of evidence, including sources they've trusted and been proven accurate in the past. So another week of wild speculation and much concern over a device that we literally know nothing about. Welcome to Android. There we go. I love
and
Android.
That's the show.
Anyway, so... take it for what it's worth. Maybe that is the next Nexus. Who knows?
It's not like the iCraze where, okay, that's the next thing. There are so many really good devices right now that this might be a great device, but I'm not going to stress over it because there's 40 others that I could look at and kind of salivate over getting.
It's true. It's true. There's a lot of great devices out there.
I'm not going to stress over it because I'm on Verizon.
Aw, Jason.
No love for Jason.
Speaking of the Nexus, the Nexi, I guess. I don't know. I took Latin. The LTE version of the Nexus 7, the 2013 version of the Nexus 7, that is now available in Google Play. This is going to make Jeff Jarvis so happy on Twig tomorrow. Listed as will shipping in 1 to 2 business days. This is a 32 gigabyte unlocked LTE device. It'll work on most major U.S. carriers. It carries the 700, 850, AWS, and 1900 megahertz LTE bands. The device will come bundled with a T-Mobile SIM card. So that means you can get up and running on a prepaid plan just with a phone call. Shipping is free. The device checks in at $349. The Google Nexus Twitter account says the Nexus 7 LTE will be at T-Mobile stores in October as well. Pick it up.
Excellent. LTE, finally. Yeah, I saw that come through on Twitter literally as Google put it out on Twitter. My immediate response was, CC Jeff Jarvis, here you go. I hope he saw it, and I hope he jumped for joy.
Oh, he absolutely did. He did.
And we'll hear all about it tomorrow on This Week in Google. All right, we have a voicemail. Someone who left us a voicemail about playlisting on Chromecast.
On the Google Chromecast, is there a way to configure a continuous playlist? You know, so you can make it where it'll play video back to back to back instead of having to go in there and open the next video. Because I try to watch like videos like Nikki Pixel and all that stuff, and I just want to know if there's a way to do a continuous playlist. Thanks.
So that voicemail just gets right to the point, by the way. So there is, depending on the app that you're using.
Right. It depends on what you're watching. I mean, if you're watching YouTube, that's
really simple. And I do that all the time, and it's super handy. I wish Netflix had this.
Not so much.
Netflix does not have it. Yeah, I've been rewatching Buffy on Netflix on my Chromecast, and like you have to pick up the phone and go to the next. And there's actually it's even a little buggy if you don't finish listening, watching one episode, like it'll skip back, so you have to choose the next episode. It'd be really nice if it did it. But in the YouTube app, there's a way to do this. So you set up I don't watch a whole lot of YouTube, so you set up playlists and then just hit play, and it just keeps going.
Yeah, the easiest way to do it would be to log in on your desktop and actually set your playlist, and then use your playlist inside the YouTube app, and it will just run through your playlist. But that assumes that everything's in YouTube. So if what you're looking for is elsewhere, that it's more of a kludge.
Yeah. I mean, and you can set up that playlist on mobile too, which is basically how we do it at home, because YouTube has some cartoons on it.
I've heard.
Yes, every once in a while you're going to find some cartoons that maybe shouldn't be up on YouTube, but they are. I'm just saying, they're there, so... My 3-year-old daughter doesn't care.
Okay? I didn't put them there. I'm just using them.
Now I just need to teach her how to create the playlist so that I'm not even involved at all. And then I can absolve myself of all responsibility and just be a horrible parent. Let's thank our other sponsor, of today's episode. Thank you to 99 Designs for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. Yet again, it's great having you guys on board. 99 Designs is a great service. It's a graphic design service that connects people looking for great graphic design with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers from all over the world. Whether you need a new logo, a mobile app, a business card, t-shirt, pretty much any other kind of graphic design, you're going to find the right designer for your project at 99 Designs. And it's an incredible service. Here's how it works. It's just a very easy service to use. You tell 99 Designs what you need. What are you looking for? You put it up on the site. Dozens of designers from their community, great graphic designers that are involved in their community, will submit designs that are created just for you based on the criteria that you've given them. You give the designers your feedback to help them refine their designs, and then you select and pay for your favorites. So you end up with this awesome design. You're basically crowdsourcing the design of whatever your project is to people who know exactly what they're doing in this world. That's super handy, especially if you have little to no graphic design capability. Put it in the hands of the people that know what they're doing. Are you developing an Android app? This is a perfect way for you to kind of get anything from icons, buttons, to your entire mobile app designed at 99 Designs. You can check out these awesome apps that are designed at 99 Designs by going to 99designs.com/mobile-app-design. And they just have a bunch of different apps, examples of designs for the different apps throughout the site, and they're framed in a phone, so you kind of have a sense for what it's going to look like when you get that in your hands on your device, And they're just really well designed. These people that put up these designs know what they're doing, and they know how to develop for modern OSs. They look very modern and current, and it's just a great way to get started with that. So if you are looking for a graphic design for a project that you have, you can get started with 99designs for as low as $199. You visit 99designs.com/AAA. There you will get a $99 power pack of services for free. A power pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in 99designs Marketplace, and you'll get nearly twice as many designs. So go ahead and visit 99designs.com/AAA and take a look. And we thank 99designs for their support, their continued support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. You guys are fantastic, and the service is great. Check it out. All right, let's get into apps. Boom.
So several weeks back, the Play Store on the web went through a pretty major redesign, and in that process, we lost a bunch of functionality. Well, some of it is slowly creeping back, and I'm really, really excited to see that we're getting some review filtering functionality back. So when you go to the Play Store and you're looking at an app, for example, you can now sort reviews by helpfulness, device, and version of the app. Which is awesome. So you can sort by rating. Actually, it was called rating, but now I just looked at it and they changed the name to helpfulness. So they're iterating this pretty quickly. You can say, show me the newest reviews, the oldest reviews, the most helpful reviews. You can say, show me just the reviews for my device. And you can say, show me the reviews for a particular version of an app. So really nice. And this is all sort of hidden. Like, you have to expand the review area in order to be able to sort through reviews that way. Yeah, Chad is showing us on screen there. Yeah, click on reviews, and there are your dropdowns. You got helpfulness, all devices, and all versions. So love this. So go ahead and keep clicking those thumbs up and thumbs down on the various reviews, because you'll make different ones float to the top there. And really happy to see this come back, because it always makes me happy to sort reviews, particularly in my own app, to see what's going on there.
Well, it just makes it more useful as a tool to kind of find good apps, because, you know, I don't know. I was really surprised when they rolled out the redesign of it, because they got rid of some really useful functional pieces of functionality on the site that I used all the time. Like, I want to be able to search extensively through here and filter and add these different sortings. So I'm really happy that they added that back in.
Yeah, with the Google Plus link to people's accounts and the ability for developers to respond to reviews as well, the review section has gotten way, way better and more helpful, particularly from a user perspective and from a developer perspective. So
the thumbs up, thumbs down, I don't know if I ever really...
That's a way to say, like, this was helpful. This is a good review.
Okay.
And I think ranks a review higher in the helpfulness section. So if you say, show me the most helpful reviews, I believe you see the ones that get the most thumbs up.
Oh, awesome. That's great.
Yeah, it's like a way to vote up a review.
Yeah, move it up to the top. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I didn't realize that. This is just a quick one, but I thought it was kind of neat. Google Earth now allows you to pull up a map that integrates with your Google Plus photos. So if you have geolocation turned on, I actually don't. I don't geolocate on my photos, but... if you do, you can pull up a layer that will show you a map in context with the photos that locate, you know, to a specific area. So you can kind of see where you were when you took these pictures on a map and kind of browse through. It just gives you another way of looking at your pictures.
I actually really, really like this.
Yeah, I think it's neat.
I played with a gadget, 6 years ago or so, that you carried with you, and it would timestamp your photos. So you would come back and you would combine the photos from your camera with the timestamps, and then it would do the same thing.
Oh, cool.
If this actually works, I would turn on geolocation on my photos, on my camera, just to be able to have a representation. I mean, can you imagine you do this for 10 years and then you pull up Google Maps and you get to see all the places that you've been in 10 years?
Yeah, it's like...
That's actually kind of cool.
It's like my dad had a map on his wall and little pins. Yeah, exactly.
these are your digital pins in the map. I love it.
That's great.
All right. So what do you use for your current music streaming service? Well, it doesn't matter because Microsoft is betting that you're going to use theirs next. That's right. Xbox Music has gone live to iOS and Android with an app out today. They want to go head-to-head with Spotify, Pandora, all your other music services. Now, here's the rub. It's free if you're web streaming for the first month, but then it's going to cost you $10 per month or $100 a year thereafter. If you want to use it on your mobile device, on your iPhone or your Android device, you actually have to pay that up front. They're not going to give you the free month. Now, there's no ability to save and play offline yet. So you can't say, look, get me this piece of music, this playlist, and let me play it when I'm offline, when I have no connectivity. But they promise that's coming soon. I don't know what soon means.
Yeah. I don't know. Have any of us used Xbox Music? Like, I was trying to find numbers for, like, how many billions of songs you have.
I had a free six-month subscription to Xbox Live Music, and I just realized I let it expire without ever having used it.
Oh.
Oh.
Well, yeah. maybe that need was just fulfilled in your life.
It wasn't
that service. Yeah. It was just that you already had something going on.
Yeah, what do you use?
You know, honestly, I still just listen to Pandora and, like, the five songs that are on my phone. To be really honest, most of the time I'm just streaming podcasts.
Yeah, I know. That's my sickness.
I stream a lot of podcasts as well. I actually use Pandora quite a bit, although I have been using the Google Play Music quite a bit, which actually goes into our next story. I got to say, sorry, Microsoft, like, happy about your launch, but that's more expensive. Xbox Music is more expensive than Google Play All Access, and also doesn't allow for downloading, which the Google product does. Google actually has begun a stage rollout of Play Music 5.2, new version for Android, and it's got two new features: All Access Genre Radio, which means if you're an All Access subscriber, which I actually am, I tried the free trial and I really liked it, and then they just started charging me, and I was like, okay. Yeah. Yep. Okay. I'm good. So with the new version 5.2, when if you go to radio or explore, pick your favorite genre, and you can enjoy unlimited radio based on the music you already love. And they also built into the new app a new download queue. So you can download or pin music that you want to listen to offline. So there's actually a proper UI to do that now. You can pause and resume and queue up items that you want to download. So when you're at the airport on the Wi-Fi and your flight is boarding and you're pinning a couple of songs and frantically downloading, you can prioritize and get them on your phone the way that you want. So yeah, nice update there. Yeah, and that's a stage rollout that's going out kind of bit by bit. There are APKs out there. Android Police did link to one if you can't wait, want to get it right away. But it should be going out to devices over the next few days.
Yeah, I installed it yesterday before walking home. And, how much time did I have on my four-block walk to listen to the radio station? I think I got two songs in. But cool that you can do that, because a lot of times I don't want to think about what I want to listen to. I just play me something that is in this kind of mode. Or this
I know I must be the wrong audience, because I haven't made a playlist in forever. I don't obsess over that. I don't sit home at night and going, I want to listen to this and then this. And then
it's been a long time since I crafted a playlist. So
exactly. Yeah,
but I'm all about you making the playlist for me. My criteria. Go.
The only music I actually listen to in the car is I have one of Jason's CDs.
That just plays
on repeat over and over.
Wow, interesting.
That's why you backed the Kickstarter, right? So that you could get more of Jason.
I wanted more of that.
You needed it mastered better.
I'm going to have to get really good headphones to listen to Jason's album, because it's going to be so beautifully mastered. I want to be able to appreciate every part of it, the clarity of it.
I'm turning red. All right. Hey, we've got a video mail to AAA@twit.tv. Someone sent us a video message. Let's play that.
Hello, AAA, and thank you for putting on such a good show. Here's my issue that I'd like some discussion on. Google Music. I love it. I'd like it to be my main music venue, but the 20,000 song limit has got me wrapped up. I have many more than that, and they're really limiting real big music lovers, and I can't understand that. And I don't know why you'd want to alienate people who are really serious about music and have a lot of music, and it really bothers me that the limit is 20,000 and you can't buy the extra storage like you can at other programs or services, I can't even give Google money to handle the whatever's above 20,000. And yeah, I'd like to know if anybody knows anything that's happening with that. Thanks.
I don't know what's happening with being able to buy more storage. I would say you might be the perfect candidate for something like All Access, because right. So now that All Access is a thing, this is a question that I had. Maybe none of us know the answer to this, but now that it's a thing and it exists, and it didn't exist when I signed up for Google Music and uploaded all my music, but if I was to be a member of All Access and uploaded 20,000 songs and they matched up to songs in the Google Music library, do those get taken out of the equation and leave room for more?
I don't think so. I think that still counts against your queue, right? I mean, at least on the upload that I uploaded a ton. I mean, literally like 20 gigabytes worth of music, and it's all still up there, even though so many of them have matched.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I feel, but, you know, I guess everybody's music library is different. That 20,000 is a lot. But, you know, when I uploaded all of my music, and at the end of the day, I think it ended up being like 11,000 tracks. Right. So, you know, I still have plenty of room. I don't know. And I feel like All Access really kind of fills in the gap there. It does. It is interesting, though, in the sense that Google does allow you to buy storage in some of their other services, you know, and Drive. You can get a large amount of storage, or maybe you already have a lot of storage. It's too bad there is no way to kind of combine that right. in some way.
I think the resource crunch here isn't the storage, though. I mean, storage is relatively cheap.
Right. It's the deals.
It's the indexing. Once you start indexing massive databases, I mean, like some people are talking about, oh, I have 200,000 pieces of music. You do that enough times over enough users, and that's a resource hog. And it's not a linear progression of the amount of resources that you need to index that. It actually becomes exponential. So 20,000 might be a sweet spot for them, and they figure that's the average and just leave it there, and all the servers will work properly for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
I mean, it might have just been that users with more than 20,000 were total outliers, right? That you know, most of their users didn't have a need for more than that. So, you know, but once, you know, I don't know. I mean, I tend to think that the age of storing, you know, acquiring music files and storing them on your hard drive and uploading them to is sort of over, that we're more in the streaming age now. Right. So, definitely, I mean, on one hand, I think it doesn't seem like too far-fetched the idea that Google would add more storage space. But on the other hand, if they don't see the user demand, they're not going to focus their energies there, right? They're going to focus their energies on everything's in the cloud. You get what you want. You pay as you go, right? Which is what All Access is, and go from there.
Yeah, what would be nice is if the music manager actually had a way of scanning your library and matching to their All Access. So you're an All Access member, matches to All Access, automatically does the add to my library thing for all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's basically the same thing. And then the extra stuff that doesn't match is what actually gets uploaded.
And
I don't think that's the way it works.
That's a feature that Google could put time into adding, because that makes sense for a larger group. If you're just asking for more storage and more songs, as Gina said, I don't think there's a critical mass of users who are all clamoring, saying, we need this or we can't use the service.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think Google Music is a great service for what you're talking about, though, particularly when you're talking about the fact that there aren't, correct me if I'm wrong, other services that allow you to seamlessly integrate their entire catalog into your uploaded catalog. It's all kind of separated. Google Music does a really good integration of the two so that it's all part of one big library.
Right.
So I would say it's probably the best service to do that with. It's obviously not hitting on all points for you, though. But thanks for sending in the video. Anyone is, we love getting video questions. So send an email to aaa@twit.tv with a link to your video mail. It'll probably make it in the show because video is exciting. All right, let's jump into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
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 I fully realize, and definitely in retrospect, that my app should have been in the app section and not in the arena, because it really did stack the deck in my favor.
We did not have a chance.
And I apologize about that. But that's nothing against the app, because actually from what I've heard the past week is that a lot of Android users are using Twit Pro and are really enjoying it for the content that we do on the Twit site. So if that was a way of getting it out there and saying, hey, check out this new awesome app.
It's worth it.
It's worth it, sure. So Twit Pro, top at 66%.
A little bit, yeah.
Sliding Explorer, second at 18%. YouTube Floating HD Player, third at 16%. So we have three fancy apps to talk about. Do you want to go first, Father Robert?
I'll go first. Why not?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So I know this is an app that's been talked about on AA before. I don't think it was actually a arena entry. But even if it was, it's changed so much in the last couple of months that I think it deserves another look. Now, if Chad will switch over to my input, I'll go ahead and kick it off. This is called Ingress. Now, you may have heard of it.
Wait a minute. What? I've never heard of it.
It's totally like Ingress. Acquiring. It's Ingressing. So the idea is they've built this over Google Maps. So these are actual representations of the streets in which we live. And then it's a giant game of capture the flag. That's right. So what they've done is there's this stuff called XM, Exotic Matter. And it comes out of these portals. Now, these portals you can capture by laying down what are called resonators. So, you put eight of these things around the portal, and that belongs to you. You can also blow up the resonators of the opposing team. So I'm blue, but there's also a green team. And once you've captured them, you can do things like linking the portals, which allows you to create fields. And once you've created the fields, that area belongs to you, and you get additional points. So, like, right now, it's a running competition, and I'm competing against the Enlightened. The Enlightened have 40% or 195 million of the mind units in the world, and my team, the blue team, has 223. Now, one of the cool things about this application is just it becomes a thing that you just whip out wherever you are and you start playing it. In fact, if Chad shows the video I shot at SFO Airport, it shows, me going from level 7 to level 8. This is me blowing up a bunch of resonators, a bunch of these portals.
I hope you didn't say that out loud while you were at the airport.
Actually, that's funny because I got stopped by a Park Services person. I was in front of the White House in D.C. and my phone started saying, "Target locked." Oh, I'm like, no. whoa. So, yeah, we need to think about that.
Yeah.
So this is me blowing up a field of green and then going in and deploying resonators to take that over. So, again, it's just like capture the flag. Now, of course, as you get more advanced, as you go from level 1 to level 8, you get access to higher, more powerful weapons, to stronger resonators, to shields, to really cool devices that Ingress keeps releasing so that you can, enhance your gameplay. Now, here's something that I think makes this app really, really good, which is it makes you do things in the real world. This app is alone responsible for me losing about 10 pounds because I've gone on walks. Every day, I'm walking through, like, these farms trying to capture portals. And, believe it or not, this app actually makes you meet people. In the audience right now, we've got a representative from each member of the team. We've got Theater Monkey, who you all know, and we've got Yellow Lancer. Yellow Lancer's on the right team. He's on the correct team. And, yeah, Theater Monkey's he's resistance.
So are you guys battling right now?
Yeah, I noticed that one of them linked up a field that I was saving for the show, but that's okay. He left me a spot. Yeah, but see, I mean, the other aspect of this game is it's really boring if you're doing it by yourself. You can only do certain actions. I mean, I can go through Petaluma and I can set up a bunch of fields and blow stuff up. But where it really becomes fun is when you get together with a bunch of high-level players and you start making these massive fields across counties, across states, across countries. And so you can log in from your desktop and you can actually look at the world and see who has set up fields where. And you get calls to head to certain parts of the county and say, okay, the resistance has just set up a big portal farm. Let's go blow it up. And it's a fun little community thing. And I think Yellow Lancer wants to say something.
And also the just max outed portal. You need 8 players.
Right.
You only put the 1 level 8 on each.
Yeah. So, game aspect is the highest resonator is level 8, and I can only lay down 1. So, I need 8 players in order to make a fully powered portal. They're evolving the gameplay because they don't want it just to be like another Foursquare where people claim titles and then they go on their way. They actually want you to do stuff with other people. I mean, I think that's unique for an app that actually makes you meet people in real life.
undeniable that Ingress is a different way to play a game.
It's a different way to play the game.
Versus pretty much anything else out there. It's pretty impressive the amount of kind of support and
absolutely. Communities are building around this. But let me put a caveat here, and that is it's still beta. So if you download Ingress onto your device, it will actually request an invitation. And you can and you have to ask Ingress if you can have an invitation to play. But let me say this. If you really, really want to play, follow me on Twitter, PadreSJ, and I will DM you with some codes. And actually, Yellow Lancer will DM you with some codes. And Theater Monkey will DM you with some codes. So if you want to play tonight, go ahead and hit me up, and we'll let you start your ingressing.
On Twitter?
On Twitter. At PadreSJ.
There we go. All right.
And it's Ingress has gotten a couple of upgrades lately, right? We mentioned when it first launched, and Chad talked about it a little bit, and I played it a little bit. I tell you the truth, I'm not a huge gamer. I found it a little complicated to grok. Like, I was like, I don't really know what these terms mean or what's a portal or what I'm supposed to do. And it was kind of loud and it would just go off. I had enabled the Ingress field trip layer. So, like, my wife and I would be driving past someplace and, like, my phone would be like making crazy sounds. And I was like, whoa.
What are you doing? Stop it.
So it seems like one of these games that you really kind of have to commit to and, like, spend time with to really get involved. But once you do, you get sucked in.
And the larger community, so, like, in D.C. and here in the Bay Area, they actually recommend if you're a level one player, they want to pair you with higher level players because it helps you to advance much more quickly. And they'll actually show you how to play. I learned on my own. And like you, that first 2 weeks, I was like, what is this? I don't want to play this. This is stupid. Walking around, great. And it wasn't until I actually got, some equipment and I got a few levels under my belt where I started saying, I'm playing this thing all the time. And that may not be good, but,
Well, you lost 10 pounds. That's amazing.
I know, exactly. Yeah, it's helping me lose weight. And Yellow Lancer.
Don't forget that there actually has an expanding storyline and events around the world.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to tell you, there's actually a story. So it's not just a bunch of people going out and playing the game. There's a storyline that runs beneath it of where the XM came from and why there are two different factions. And they even give you codes. You can earn codes that will get you special equipment in the game. One of the most satisfying things is walking into an area that has a lot of enemy high-level portals, enemy portals, and then you use what's called an ADA or a Jarvis to flip the portal. And it makes people flip out. Seriously, they get pissed. Like, really pissed.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, sign me up.
I know. Oh, wait, I can get real beat world up in real
hostility?
Life?
I love it.
But that's Ingress.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, we've definitely had Ingress on the show in the past. But I love getting kind of the take of people that are using it regularly because I'm like you, Gina. I opened it up and played with it a couple of times and like, felt kind of a little overwhelmed and just realized how like siloed my life is right now with my family that I don't really get out a whole lot. So I didn't really have a whole lot of opportunity to make an impact or really get sucked into it that much. So that's Ingress. It's free and awesome. Invites PadreSJ on Twitter, right?
At PadreSJ.
Send
them to me, and I will find these fine gentlemen. We probably have 15 invites between us.
Awesome.
So we'll just randomly select 15 out of the people who contact me on Twitter.
Excellent.
I may have a couple, too, so I'll send them to you so that you can distribute them as well.
Fantastic.
All right.
That's awesome. Great.
It's like an All About Android giveaway. I love it. Gina, you're up next. What you got? Oh, actually, I know what you've got because I've got it installed. I'll show it off when we talk about it.
My pick this week came in very handy for me this weekend. It's called Eat 24, Food Delivery and Takeout. Eat 24. So this is a pretty crowded app space. You got your Grubhubs and your Seamless. Here's the thing. I've never used one of these apps that helps you find restaurants and particularly food delivery services because I live here in San Diego, but I live in kind of like an outlying area of San Diego. And none of those other big apps have data for my area. They just don't have any restaurants. But this weekend, I heard about a Korean joint nearby from a friend, and I went online, and I saw that I could order online, and it turns out that it was through the E24 app. So this is what brought me to E24. E24 is a great app. It's really, really well designed. It's really fun to use. The copy is very well written. You basically launch the app, you start it up, and you use it to find restaurants, and particularly delivery. I happen to use it for delivery or takeout. It knows your location, and it shows you restaurants nearby and sorts them by distance, whether or not they do delivery, what their delivery fees are. They've got full menus for each one of these restaurants. There are over 25,000 restaurants in over 1,000 cities. So I think E24's coverage is really good compared to some of the other options. You order your food directly from the app. You can pay through PayPal, which is awesome. If you have any support problems, they've got chats, 24-hour chat inside with humans who will check on your food order to see, you know, if it's taking too long or if there's something wrong. It's really it was a really great experience. I have to say, I had a really good Korean dinner, and it showed me restaurants nearby that I didn't even know. I've been living here for 8 years. I didn't even know did delivery to my house. So definitely worth checking out if you've never checked out. Whenever I hear about food delivery apps, I think, oh, that's probably not going to work here where I live. But this one really did. And yeah, I just really, really liked it. And actually, it has a companion website as well. So you might see, you know, restaurants maybe just hooked into E24 the way that one I ordered from was as well. It also has this notes feature. So if you order food, you can take a picture of the food. You can make a note to yourself. Hey, definitely get this next time. Ah, it's kind of soggy. Don't get this next time. So it kind of lets you keep a log or keep notes on the stuff that you really liked or didn't like as well. So if you do a lot of traveling, you're in certain cities at certain times, you can kind of, you know, jog your memory and remember what it was that you liked or really didn't like. It's hooked in each restaurant listing is hooked into Yelp reviews. You can read other users' reviews and see what the good stuff is to order. Just really great data, really great UI. E24, it is free to install as well.
Gina, you've just given me my Zen balance. So my app makes me walk around and your app makes me stay home and eat.
Right, exactly. Well, right. Lose 10 pounds playing Ingress and then go home and order some dumplings. Jason, I don't know if E24 showed you some good restaurants near you there in Petaluma. I was sort of hoping that you would have a good...
I definitely have a few. It's not a huge list here, but there's definitely four here to mm-hmm. choose from, like zeroed in on my particular location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can do popular, newest, distance, the minimum order, delivery fee. I was even able to tip. Like, I paid through PayPal. I was able to put the tip on there, so it was really easy.
I mean, yeah, and Shree Indian is on there, which is a good thing because they are delicious.
Yeah, yeah. So. That looks really good.
I know where the In-N-Out is.
Yeah, they're not on here.
In-N-Out wasn't on there.
That's definitely not Good Eats. Sorry.
Animal style.
Awesome.
Protein style.
Protein style. All right.
Excellent. E24. Check it out. It is free. And yes, it's making me hungry. Excellent.
Stop looking at that. Now I'm hungry.
I know. I'm really hungry. I might just go over to Shree and get some Indian food. Seriously. I'll put it in here first. I'll put it in now. And then when the show's done, you can just go pick it up.
Yeah,
take out
order.
So my app. So I had another one of those days where I was like, man, I have no idea what to cover. And I realized this is an app that both with our first daughter 3.5 years ago and with our second daughter for the last 4 months, this is an app that my wife uses all the time. And it actually has a pretty cool feature. It's called Baby ESP. So I know instantly right now a lot of you are tuning out, but those of you that this connects with, you're going to thank me for it. All right, everybody else, see you later. See you in about 5 minutes when I'm done talking about baby stuff. The thing that's really cool about this, right, is it's essentially a way to keep track of everything with your baby. Hopefully my wife doesn't mind, but about the only thing we keep track of is when she is feeding our baby.
Oh.
So there you go. But you have the option to do a lot up here. You can actually set all of these different categories and track them. Why is this good? Well, when you have a baby, you realize that there are certain things that you have to keep on a schedule, right? You have to know when they're eating or when they're sleeping. Your doctor might ask you to keep track of this stuff. And actually keeping track of this stuff, am I scaring the living daylights out of you, Father Robert?
No, it's true though. It's true. We kept like paper journals, but especially naps. Naps was a big deal for us. Like,
yep,
figuring out when she was going to be ready for a nap next.
Sorry, absolutely. Or and one thing that I really like about this, knowing it when your significant other yes. did any of that, right?
Yes.
So there is a way with this to where I'll go ahead and show you. Well, actually,
it makes handoffs like way easier.
Yeah. So basically, I have a profile here for our daughter Savannah, and my wife uses this app all the time. And I sometimes need to know, like, you know, when I wake up after my wife has left in the morning, like, when do I feed her next? And, you know, my wife's in the commute or whatever, so I don't know when to give her a bottle. This syncs through Google services so that I can have it installed on my device. She adds me as a connected person. So everything that she does in her instance of the app syncs to my device.
That's actually pretty
cool.
So
I know, yeah. So we would both be in connection with each other to know exactly what the schedule has been, which I think is pretty darn neat. And then it has some other features that you can do, things like stats and charts and everything if you want, you know, kind of flashy graphs and stuff to illustrate certain things. But ultimately, it's just really handy, and it has just an incredible amount of categories, probably more than you'd ever want to actually keep track of, to be honest. If you kept track of all this stuff, you'd spend all of your time in the app, and I don't know how useful that is. But it might be useful for a particular thing. And if it is, it's definitely the best app of its kind that we've found. And hey, we've used it now with two babies. I figured it deserves to be in the arena.
This thing actually this looks awesome. I'm just feeling grumpy because I'm the only one here without a baby.
It's quantified baby.
I've been enjoying my baby. I just got to say. You are the only one, right?
That's right.
Oh, okay.
You have yours.
Because obviously.
Is there something you should tell us about Chad? Because I don't know. Your baby.
My cat, right?
Minecraft baby.
My cat.
OMG, no, we're daddy. Talking,
yeah, your cat.
I've been nursing my cat lately. Is that weird?
There's no reason that you couldn't put the picture of your cat in here.
Yeah.
And keep track of when you feed your cat.
The bar graph for naps is pretty off the chart, let me tell you.
This would be perfect for goldfish, too.
I think I need to, like, tone down the cat naps. But whenever I'm out, my roommate's in. He knows, you know, when I've fed the other cats. Mm-hmm. So everything's fine.
If you could get a smart sensor that would strap onto your baby's wrist or ankle so that could detect when your baby is asleep and it could map out sleep periods, now that would be incredible.
Then you wouldn't have to do anything about it.
Exactly.
Then you could be a lazy parent.
Exactly. Back to the bad parent. Now I can be a bad parent.
See, there we go. I'm not titling this show I'm a bad parent, okay? Not doing it, even if it's a recurring theme. No, it's a great app. It is free. So they have a free version. It's a trial, 7-day trial. Because it's kind of like this integrated service and because it's awesome, it is a $4.99 app, which sounds expensive. But I'm telling you, we use it all the time.
If you're a parent, that's nothing.
Oh, no, totally. And I mean, especially in comparison to doing this all freehand with a piece of paper, which is the way we did it when we first had our first daughter. And then we found this app and it just made everything way easier. So check it out. Baby ESP. Maybe you're a baby. I'm sure we have some babies in the audience.
Try your naps.
Some way, shape, or form.
Besides, everyone is my son or daughter.
There we go. Perfect. Thanks for tying that all together. All right. So, three awesome apps in the arena this week. Ingress, Eat24, and Baby ESP. I'm really curious to see how this week goes. AAApoll.com/126 is the URL to check out if you want to vote for your favorite app this week. AAApoll.com/126. Vote for your favorite. Early reports are in. I'm pretty sure I know exactly where this is headed, though.
Yeah, no, but we all know how this works. You know, it's just early returns, and as the episode comes out, it's going to go crazy.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
and the foodies aren't watching.
I don't know. I would hold out for food.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a bachelor, and that E24 sounds really good.
Now I can't help but notice that I have zero votes.
Someone's got to fix that.
I saw someone in the chat room that said, oh, this is interesting. I think I might vote for Jason's app.
Thank you, Chad.
Thank you, Chad.
Chad is such a good guy.
And somebody else. That was Eugene. I know it was. No, okay. All right, there we go. Yes, I made the comment. Now it's working. Excellent. All right, good stuff this week, you guys. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love this.
Good to have you back on the show, Father Robert.
You got to invite me back more. I mean, come on. I'm all about the Android.
I don't know. I see you every week with This Week in Enterprise.
I know. He has to sit and watch me. I can see him every once in a while when he starts to nod off like, oh, no, I'm still here. Wait, what?
I just set it on the wide shot. And
I do feel bad about the workout I give you because sometimes I throw you some last minute. Oh, yeah, by the way, Jason, we've got four people in studio today. Where do we put them? And you're just like,
four people, three product cameras, and this flaming hoop that you have to jump through. No, it's never that.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Minus the flaming
hoop. I'm so happy to finally be on a show with Gina. Are you kidding me? My goodness, it's an honor.
This is great. I know. Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, I see you in chat all the time. I thought, have we done a show with Father Robert? I guess not. So we'll definitely have to have you again.
I kind of live in there.
Android, come on.
Yeah, Android.
So, what you got going on? Where can people find you?
Tell people. I just moved back to the Bay Area. I'm still setting up my place in San Francisco. So I'm going to say, come and see the Enterprise show. It may not be what you think it is. If you think it's all just boring switches and cabling and software, we try to reach out and really spread the knowledge about how everything is connected. That's the tagline of the show. If you just want to know how everything is connected, come watch This Week in Enterprise Tech. It's every Monday at noon, live.twit.tv, or go ahead and download us.
I can tell you for a fact, I started my career in podcast working for ZDNet at CNET.
That's right.
I love ZDNet. They're great and everything, but some of the early shows and everything that I worked on was enterprise-y, and it did put me to sleep. This Week in Enterprise Tech does not put me to sleep. Even if I wasn't switching the show, it's very fascinating. You guys talk about a lot of really cool stuff.
But so, it's also because I electrify the chair.
Yeah. That too. Yes. Keeps me on my toes. Well, it's great having you on the show. Thank you for coming back. Gina, what you working on these days?
I co-host This Week in Google, as well as All About Android here on the Twit Network. And Twig airs on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific. So you should come on by and watch the show tomorrow and chat live. I do a couple other things. You can see everything I'm up to at ginatrapani.org. You should also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/GinaTrapani. I build an app called ThinkUp, and we're launching soon. I swear, we're launching soon. But you should go to thinkup.com and get yourself on the waiting list. Get your name on the waiting list, and you'll have first dibs when we do launch.
Awesome. Lots of cool stuff. Thank you, Gina. Chad, other than working on...
When I'm not nursing my cat and making sure to keep all the stats on how I'm doing I produce a few shows on the network. I help produce This Week in Google, MacBreak Weekly, Twit, and then I also host This Week in YouTube and OMG Craft, and then I do the technical directing on All About Android, so that's why I'm...
Yes, you do. excellent. Well, thank you for being awesome, as always. Hey, I just found out, I didn't know this, we have a Reddit page.
Whoa, really?
We have a Reddit page, twitaaa.reddit.com. Kyle D. is one of the moderators, and he sent me an email, and he said, hey, you know, this is like a snake that eats its tail, if that's the right analogy. If we talk about it, people will participate, and if people participate, then there will be more to talk about from the Reddit, right? Because the way we use the Reddit on the Tech News today is a great way to kind of gauge interaction of people who follow the show to know what stories you find important, what stories maybe you don't, or alert us to things that maybe we have missed. So it's twitaaa.reddit.com. Check it out. I'm going to start kind of plugging it at the end of the show to get people active on it. And we will definitely refer to this as we're setting up the show to really kind of see if maybe we've missed something. Put your links in there and, participate. I think there's even plans to kind of give you some flair if you do awesome stuff and we talk about your stuff and everything. So, it's nice. The crazy world of Reddit. But I kind of love it. So there you go. twitaaa.reddit.com. Take a look at that. And that is it for this week. Thank you so much for
Jason,
joining us.
What do you have? What's your website that you want to plug?
Oh, I forgot about me, didn't I? Yeah. About.me/JasonHowell or yellowgoldmusic.com is where you can find me for the time being. There we go. Thank you, Chad. That's it for this week. Leave us a voicemail. Be a part of the show. Put your voice on the show at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can leave us an email, send us an email, or a video mail, attach a link to an email, and send it to aaa@twit.tv. You can find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We're on Google+. There's a community there. Just a lot of stuff happening on Google Plus. Show notes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find past episodes there, as well as iTunes and YouTube all over the map. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.